Coming up next on The Voice of Alabama Politics, are tax cuts coming? Also, can we eliminate guns on school grounds? And why are lawmakers afraid to pass a CA for gaming?
Be afraid. Be very afraid.
Ah, scared of the own shadow. Meow. All this and much, much more coming up next on The V. Welcome to The Voice of Alabama Politics, where we tackle the tough issues so you have the hard facts. I'm your host, Bill Britt, and I'm joined today by Susan Britt, research guru extraordinaire, and Josh Moon, columnist and investigative reporter at APR. Welcome.
Hello, guys.
You know, we mentioned last week that we thought that the incentive packages were going to come up this week, and it turns out that that wasn't the case. They are coming up this coming week. So there are, Josh, as you reported, four bills. Two of them we are pretty much the same as they have been, the Jobs Act and so forth. Mm-hmm. There will be another one on transparency. Mm-hmm. But I thought the most interesting one to be new is the one that's sponsored by Senator Bobby Singleton. Is known as the Innovation and Small Business Act, and it is a bit different. Can you tell us how?
Yeah, sure. It focuses a lot on, first of all, on innovation and technology sector, and they're trying to grow that. But also, it really focuses on smaller communities. It gives when they, you know, on a lot of these deals, what basically happens is the state awards money based on what counties and cities are willing to put in themselves. So they'll do matching funds of a certain percentage, basically. And in this particular bill, that percentage is going to be significantly lower that smaller counties have to put in. So a county with, say, 25,000 people is only going to have to put in 25 cents for every dollar that they get in economic development funds, where a county with more than 150,000 people is going to have to match it dollar for dollar.
Yeah. And Susan, this really opens up the door for places in the Black Belt, mm-hmm. the more mm-hmm. rural communities that have been ignored.
Yes, they have been. And, it, you know, even down to water and sewer for that matter. But this will give these communities an opportunity to have jobs, to have nice facilities, encourage, you know, businesses to go into those communities with a very low impact on the population.
And I think Governor Ivey made the case that we have to make economic incentives viable to reach all Alabamians and not just the ones in the bigger cities. So
I think there are a lot of opportunities in a lot of those smaller counties that never really come to fruition because people simply don't have the matching funds to do the site prep, right. to do a lot of the work mm-hmm. that goes into site location and setting up for these businesses that would locate there. And so this will give them a lot of opportunities to do that. And plus, you're talking about a technology sector where there's not a whole lot of money that's going to be required for a lot of these businesses to come in anyway. Right. And so I think that'll be helpful. Now, I will say that what I hope that they also do is focus a lot on those small communities and getting them broadband access and the other tools that they'll need to attract some of these folks, because you can't just do it. You can't just go in there and say, we got cheap labor, man, but here's no connectivity at all. So,
right. As with the megasite here in Etowah County, they put a megasite here, but they failed to follow up with, you know, how much is it going to cost to put water and sewer to it, which is now a big issue. So they've got to get broadband out there, or it's not a big deal.
Well, it's a moot point. But again, we applaud the effort.
Absolutely.
Hopefully it'll be followed through on. And it sounds like something that's new and important and inventive. Mm-hmm. I am known for beating a dead horse, so I'm going to once again take out the crop and try to get this horse to ride. Of course, most of the time I feel like I'm saddling a donkey. It's just weird. Backwards, yeah. But, you know, Josh, as we've talked about on this show hundreds of times, we give millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in incentives to get people to do business here. We have people here that have existing businesses that will grow those businesses exponentially if we will just pass a comprehensive gaming bill to allow them to allow the voters to decide they want gaming, and then we will bring in maybe close to $1 billion in revenue through gaming to the state.
Yeah, it's you know, I did a story this week about, you know, the efforts that are kind of, I don't want to say behind the scenes because that makes it seem like people are sneaking around. That's not at all what's happening. They're just kind of quietly going about business and trying to put together a comprehensive gaming bill that possibly could come out this session, but most likely in the next session. And yeah, you're right. It's the reason we keep beating this dead horse is because it's a good horse. You know,
I mean, it's a good horse.
Yeah, it's a good horse, man. I mean, because it doesn't make any sense the way we're doing things right now. And that's, you know, what kills me is that is a universal thought right there. Nobody who looks at our gaming situation, even if they're opposed to gaming and they're not going to vote for any comprehensive bill, they will always admit to you, oh, yeah, it's really screwed up what's going on right now. And there's, you know, and there's no way to stop it unless you go in and pass legislation that properly regulates it in some way, shape, or form. And until, you know, we have this bill that would basically do that would regulate it and also establish some permanent sites where gaming is going to take place. It would produce 12,000 to 15,000 jobs, permanent jobs, not to mention the construction jobs that would go into this thing. You know, on top of, you know, bringing in roughly $750 million a year, almost $1 billion. And so, you know, what are we doing, man?
Yeah, we're giving all these economic incentives, right, to attract businesses here, to give job opportunities, and ultimately so that the state of Alabama can make tax revenue off of this. Now, we're investing in those, right? All you have to do is sign a piece of paper and make gaming legal to get all the tax revenue that you need for all kinds of things to be able to do here in this state. If we don't have to invest a dime, and they're wanting to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it polls very well around the state. We just have some lawmakers that are nervous Nellies about doing it. They're afraid that they might do something wrong. I had one of them talk to me the other day and said, well, we've got to get this right. You know, we only have one time to get this right. No, you don't. Because if you had only one time to get it right, we wouldn't be in half the messes we're in. You have to keep going back and changing things all the time.
That's the way it
Pass the works. CA and then fix it with bills, laws, regulations. That's how we do things.
Yeah, it is. And you're right about that. I mean, I understand their hesitancy to rush too fast. I mean, it is a big bill and it is a complicated thing. And they want to make sure that they can do it the right way. But at this point, we've talked about it so much. We all know the ins and outs, or we should. If you don't know the ins and outs of the gaming situation in this state, then I don't, you know, maybe you shouldn't be a lawmaker anymore because it's everywhere. And, when I spoke to the Speaker of the House, Nathaniel Ledbetter, this week, you know, one thing he mentioned is we've got gaming everywhere in this state. We've got to do something to regulate it because the state is getting very little revenue from any of this. And in the meantime, we have all of the problems that come with gaming.
Yep. All right, we're going to have to leave it right there. You're watching The V, the voice of Alabama politics. We'll be right back.
Today, Montgomery is a safer city. It's time to shift the narrative and take control of our future. We're reopening community centers, remediating blight, and revitalizing neighborhoods across the city. And we're unleashing new opportunities. Over the past year, companies have invested a record-setting $2 billion in Montgomery and created 2,000 jobs. This is a new Montgomery. And together, we're reimagining the possibilities.
There seems to be a new wave of aggressive driving lately.
You see those people, they are the ones that are tailgating other people because they have to get through their destination now.
Weaving in and out traffic looks like they could care less about who's around them. There's no one else on the roadway. They're the only one there.
Aggressive driving can be the difference between life and death.
All because somebody thought they needed to be the front of the line and get there first.
Slow down. Don't be the reason that someone else doesn't go home tonight.
Welcome back to The V, the voice of Alabama politics. Susan, there are times when you just want to shake your head in disbelief, and there are other times where you really just feel like screaming, yelling, sobbing. Mm-hmm. This is one of those times. Given all the children who have been ruthlessly murdered at their schools, Alabama does not ban firearms from school grounds. There's been a bill to try to do that, ban it from school grounds, but these numpties have sent that bill to
subcommittee,
which is where things go to die.
That's where things go to die. How is it that we allow them on school grounds, but guarantee you try to walk into the state house or any courthouse in the state of Alabama and they will send you back to your car right quick.
If
they don't arrest you. Why are we allowing this in schools? And I understand the argument here that, well, maybe they have them in their cars in the pickup lines. We'll write it into the bill that says, okay, as long as you keep it in your car, in the pickup line, it's okay. But don't send the whole thing to subcommittee. At least have some discussion. We have got to stop the violence in our schools. Why is it that our children have to learn how to, you know, have a safety plan when they're trying to learn?
I mean, Josh, the horror of this is that we need to do something about the gun violence in this country, but there is not a single Republican that will even acknowledge we have a problem outside of mental health. And I know it's mental. You have to be mentally ill to kill a bunch of children.
But it's got to stop.
But
somewhere.
It's hard to do it with a butter knife.
Yeah. 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 Well, you know, I think my response typically back to the folks that talk about, you know, well, the mental illness problem is what we really got to address. I said, well, you know, I think the first step in addressing that is to make sure that the folks with mental illnesses don't have firearms.
That would be a
damn good step, I think. But, you know, this it kind of highlights where we are and how far to the right we've moved on this particular issue, among others. In the country, back in, I want to say 90 or 93, when we first implemented the gun-free school zone laws, all right, it passed in Congress, passed in the Senate on a voice vote with no objections, and passed in the House, I believe it was 331 or 33-1. Essentially, no pushback whatsoever from anybody. Everybody agreed, yeah, we shouldn't have guns in schools, okay? We shouldn't have guns on school grounds. You shouldn't have guns at high school sporting events. You shouldn't have guns there. And somehow we have transformed over the course of the last 20 or 30 years into, I don't know, man, just a really dumb society about when it comes to firearms and regulation and how we do this. It's everybody... Yeah, I can't remember the comedian that talked about this, but he said everybody knows somebody that owns a weapon that we all wish didn't own a weapon, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And we all know these things that are out there. And it just that's what I'm talking about. These folks that just get so carried away with it. And, you know, this is part of the problem. We have a gun-loving culture, and that's part of the issue of why all these things only happen in this country like this.
And I own a gun. Susan owns a gun. We're not against people owning guns for their own protection or for hunting or don't really hunt with an AR-15, but some people claim they do. I don't know why they want to shoot up their food that bad. But the truth is, I think we have a gun fetish.
Yes.
And it's a gun fetish.
It borders
on the kind of fetish that people have for pornography these days, where they just can't get enough of it. It's a sickness almost. But, you know, if we can't come together on common sense legislation to protect children at school, then we are really a failed state.
I agree. Got to start somewhere. It absolutely has to start somewhere.
I don't want to take, you know, and again, let me put this in more strict terms. This is not an anti-Second Amendment law. This is a school safety law. Yeah. It's about school safety.
Absolutely.
Nobody's trying to take away your gun.
You can regulate all of your rights, okay? There's nothing wrong with it. And if you think that's untrue, let me know, and I'll write a story next week telling people that you're sleeping with farm animals, okay?
Yeah, exactly.
But that would be illegal, even though I've got this freedom of press, freedom of speech, you know, that's out there, because we have reasonable regulations to protect the public and protect the greater good. And we've decided on what these are, and the public thinks that a lot of these regulations that we're talking about are things that we need. We just can't get the politicians to move.
Yeah, well, they're afraid of that small little base that determines a primary election. And so there you go. Hey, I want to move on real quick. Pardons and paroles.
Again.
There's another bill that's right in the toilet. Chris England put forward a bill that would say that basically the pardons and parole, they would put a board together to pass the rules and regulations for pardons and parole. Mm-hmm. And then pardons and parole would have to obey the rules, which they don't do now. Yeah. Or the person, the incarcerated individual seeking parole, could file a suit to the Court of Criminal Appeals.
We got, you know, 53%, we were at releasing 53% in 2018. Now we're down to 6% in this fiscal year.
That are being released.
Have been released. In the first quarter, 97% of applicants have been denied. And this is against their own guidelines that they have at pardons and paroles.
Yeah, well, this is I think this is the Chris England subcommittee segment of the show that we're doing here now.
Yes, so that's
the
is.
Firearm bill is also his as well. And so I'm going to tell Chris, y'all just start him in subcommittee. And, you know, it's honestly, you know, and name the subcommittee the Reasonable Legislation Subcommittee. And it honestly is atrocious. I mean, what's taking place at pardons and paroles. All right. We have a process. We've established the process. We have guidelines that have been set up. We have guidelines that have been accepted by everybody, and they're not following the guidelines. And it's kind of like this gun issue. The reason that they're not doing it is because there's no political downside to denying parole. Okay.
Right.
There's a political downside to granting parole, and then that parolee going out and committing a crime, and somebody pushing back and saying, "Well, why is this guy out of jail?" You know.
Right.
And
well,
so
you,
that's what we have.
One of the biggest problems is that the president of the board is the right hand of A.G. Marshall, and A.G. Marshall is trying to get his bona fides to be whatever next political position he wants.
Well, and the problem is, Steve Marshall was a Democrat for 20 years. And then when Bentley appointed him as a Republican AG, he had to go in and become all Charles Bronson on everybody. And he's still more like little Bo Peep. But we're going to have to leave it right there. You're watching The V, the voice of Alabama politics.
Throughout my career, I've seen many crashes, and a lot of the fatalities are from people who haven't worn their seatbelt.
Cars have rolled over multiple times. I've had people end up in lakes, ravines. I've been looking for people in the woods for a couple hours before.
Usually just about every bone in their body is broken, their organs have ruptured, and typically they die.
You want to save a life? Just simply click a button and put the seatbelt on.
Seatbelts really do save lives.
Thank you.
Welcome back to The V, the voice of Alabama politics. Susan, there are a couple of bills to phase out the grocery tax. Now, I know on the show, and we've called for it to be just outright, just stop it, all right? The 5% tax on groceries, just stop it. But there's a, or 4% tax. There's a bill to phase it out by Danny Garrett in the House, and Arthur Orr has one in the Senate. And the idea is to cut it down to 3%, effective September 1, and then every year after that, cut it down, cut it down, cut it down.
It is. And one of them is, I believe, Arthur Orr's is attached to the WIC availabilities, which would be some vegetables and fruits, you know, canned fish, some meats, and so forth. Whereas the other bill that's out there right now...
They're suggesting that.
Goes by more of a SNAP plan. But I believe... we just need to get rid of it altogether. You know, maybe regulate, you can't put it on, you know, you can still have tax on sugary drinks and, you know, things that are bad for you. But let's give an overall break to the people here. We're talking about phasing this out over 4 years.
Yeah, but we could do it. You could get rid of it tomorrow.
Well, you could.
And the people are going to spend the money. But this thing about tying it to WIC, you know, that just smells to me. It really, really smells. And then, you know, there's a suggestion of tying it to SNAP benefits, which includes more products, but it's still restrictive.
Yeah, it is. You know, and I think the Democrats in the legislature, few of them as there are, are pushing for the SNAP regulation on this, because it does include it includes most things that you would think of as grocery items. All right. And so, yeah, there are some limitations, but I think most people could probably live with the SNAP definition in there. And, you know, where the WIC is really, really restrictive on what it is and would still leave a lot of poor families paying for things that they're going to have every, you know, every week out of their groceries. And so, it's we've talked about this before. I mean, it's such a stupid tax. It's such a regressive, you know, kind of hateful tax on poor people. You're charging people to eat, you know.
And you know, what I like is you've got two very rich men who are wanting to continue to tax, I mean, to take time to cut this tax.
They're trying to help their poor brethren when they don't understand what it's like to be poor.
I mean, they don't mind paying, you know, extra tax on their arugula or their Gruyere cheese or their filet mignon.
What was the Dr. Oz, the crudité tray?
You know, they ain't worried about that, man. They're going to get their crew today.
Oh, yeah.
But what they're worried about is they don't want somebody out here, you know, getting anything but canned fish.
Right, yeah. Don't go get real fish from, you know, from the market, you know. Yeah, make sure it's in a can. I mean, what?
Yeah.
You know... you know how harmful that can be? How much sodium and stuff is in some of that? I mean, come on, guys.
Never mind the chemicals.
Here's an idea. Maybe call in a nutritionist and talk to them at a committee meeting or something. Maybe talk to them about what they would suggest.
Well, I mean, I might think of, you know, putting a cap on what you can charge on a Twinkie and a dang.
Yes.
Dr. Thunder.
Yeah.
You know, there you go. I think this has something to do with poor people, but I could be wrong. they're considering a modest tax cut because God knows we don't want to give anything away. But, I mean, Alabama's taxes are ridiculously low.
They are. And I'm sorry, but guys, simple math. If you reduce a tax somewhere, you're going to have to replace it somewhere else. So, you know, you can't have four and subtract one and get back to needing 4 cents there. You're going to have to replace that 1 cent somewhere else.
Josh, what they want to do is they want to they want to do some eliminations on income tax. And a couple of them make some sense. But overall, you know, we have the lowest per capita income tax in the United States. Now, I think part of this comes from when Ron DeSantis, the Florida governor, came up here and suggested at the recent Algop get together that the state should do away with an income tax, but I don't think he explained why Florida doesn't need an income tax.
Yeah. Well, we explained it earlier, and when we talked about gambling, that's the reason why Florida doesn't have an income tax. Yeah. You know. So listen, that's all fine. Let me tell you what. You're right. These are modest little tax cuts, and they're not going to make a whole lot of difference for especially for poor people. You know, you're talking about 50 cents a year for poor people or so. But let me tell you what would help is you could eliminate the income tax. Where the income tax starts, the basement level of that income tax. You could bump that way up in this state, and it would help out a lot of poor folks, because when you're talking about percentages of taxes, a percentage on a person bringing in 20 grand a year, 5%, that's a whole lot more than on a person making 200,000 a year paying the same 5% in terms of their overall income and the impact on the money that they have to spend to go out and buy groceries that you're still taxing, because you only want to phase that out over the next 4 years. And maybe some of it's not on the WIC program. So that's, if you want to help poor people, you want to lift from the bottom, which I'm not sure anybody actually does in this state, at least on one side of the aisle. But if you want to lift from the bottom, that's how you do it. That's how you give people a leg up and help them out.
Biggest problem is most of these legislators have never had to count change to buy pinto beans to be able to feed their families. They don't understand what that means.
You know, I do.
We've done it.
I'm going to take a point to say that there are some Republicans I know that do care very deeply about these things and have, in fact, experienced that loss and hunger and you know, childhood poverty is not unknown to all of our legislators.
There's one in particular I'm thinking of now.
Not just Democrats, but again,
they need to step up.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's the problem. You can't get everybody on board with it because, you know, when they're worried about the cost of their arugula and beer cheese, you know, they can't be bothered with the problems of poor folk, Josh.
Just they're going to have to get louder with their voices because these other voices are too loud. They need to be tamped down by the voices that really understand what this means.
Well,
yeah, you got to give people a chance. That's the biggest thing here is you got to give some struggling people in this state a real chance. And that's what you're there to do in the legislature. Give some people a chance.
Well, the best government is the government that rules for all the people and rules for the poor, the children, and the elderly. Mm-hmm. But that's my own opinion. You've been watching The V, the voice of Alabama politics. You watch us because we watch them.